Okay, so I apologize that I will give many people will learn nothing new because I was asked to give an introductory talk about some old paper that many people in this room already read. So I will be talking about fusion categories. We'll work over complex numbers. So what does it mean? Well, there is a long definition, but let me just summarize it. So first of all, so these are monoidal, which means they have a tensor product and associativity constraint, satisfying pentagon. Now, they are rigid, which means that there is a functor of taking dual on the right and on the left. Then they're semi-simple with finitely many simple objects. X sub I, which in this conference we call anions. And so we have a Schur's, what in the representation theory of finite group is called Schur's lemma, which means that homomorphisms from xi to xj are zero if I is different from j and one dimensional if I equals j. Now, the notion that I will need is the notion of a graded fusion category. And so for this purpose, I fix G, which is a finite group. Then a category graded by G is what you might guess. D is a direct sum over G in G, D sub G. So direct sum of subcategories. The condition is that the tensor product should map DG cross DH to DGH. And so this means that for every I, to every simple object xi, it lies in one of these components. And so we can attach to it the degree of xi, which is in G. And then these degrees are multiplicative. So if xi is in dg and xj is in dh, then every summand in xi tensor xj is in dgh. So whenever this number nijk is not zero, xk is in dgh. So in this case, it's easy to show, deduce from these axioms that one belongs to this category d1. In fact, this d1 is a fusion category itself. It's a fusion subcategory of D. Not necessarily. So D1 is a fusion subcategory of D. And also, if X is in DG, then the dual is in DG inverse. And when I said left and right dual, actually in the semi-simple category, they are the same. In categories with good properties, such as spherical categories, they're actually canonically the same.
Is this the same notion as a category acted on by representations of the Monte Carlo G?
Not quite, I think. No, it's... Well, no, I don't think so. Well, I have to think about it, but
so
how it is related.
So there's a result that every fusion category has this graded structure.
Not every fusion category has this structure, but many fusion categories do. And in fact, in Lukas Fitkovsky's talk yesterday, it was explained that such categories arise in some physical models. Some particular kind of categories, which is braided cross G categories. And what I will say today, I will talk about how to classify. So if I give you this category D1, how to classify possible Ds. And this problem is similar to the problem which was discussed by Lucas, and in fact can be treated by the same method. But I will explain about this problem, which is slightly different. So, yeah, so first of all, I will say, so grading is faithful. This is the next thing I was going to say. If CG, DG is not zero for any G in G. And also category D1 is called the trivial component. And all the categories DG are called components. And not today, not in my discussion today.
So this is key grading only for the simple object. Every simple object has this key grading.
See, every simple object belongs to a particular DG. And then if grading is faithful, we say that D is a G extension of C equal to D1. And an example of this is extensions of finite groups. Namely, we can consider D to be the category of vector spaces graded by group K. So simples X sub K corresponds to elements K in K, and they're all invertible. And the inversion is just inversion in the group. Then if you have a surjective homomorphism from K to G, let me call it phi, then this gives rise to a G grading on G, on D, which is just, this is the degree map. K is another finite group, which is larger than G. So what is the trivial component in this grading? Well, it is just so we have this subgroup H, which is the kernel of phi, which is a normal subgroup in K. And D1 is just the category of vector spaces graded by H. So we get an extension, a group extension. Actually, there is a terminological inconsistency because this is what is called an extension of G by H, but it's a G extension of vec H. We chose this kind of terminology. And so this shows that the group extensions are, so we have an extension of groups, 1H, K, G, 1. And this is a special case of this theory. So in group theory, of course, there is a nice problem of classifying group extensions, and it is solved in classical group theory by some kind of cohomologies. And we want to have a similar theory of classification of extensions of fusion categories. Okay, I do not know precise meaning of this, but yeah.
So in this language, is this a G extension of fusion category kind of follow this group extension, or whether there's a, for every group extension, there is an analog of a G extension for fusion category?
No, there is the problem of constructing G extensions of fusion category is a generalization of the problem of constructing group extensions.
Oh, I see. But however, this two problem is not one-to-one corresponding to each other.
Not to one-to-one, no, this is a special case. Because, for example, we can consider groups with cocycles,
yeah.
And this is more general and still can be explained in the realm of usual group theory. And this is still more general where you can have non-abelian things.
Okay.
Well, I should not say abelian or non-abelian because these are arbitrary fusion categories where X cross Y is not necessarily equal to Y cross X. But in any case, non-invertible. Things can happen.
But in the group extension, we know that each group puts a representation from a symmetric transaction degree. So So there's a similar notion, you know, how to express group extension in terms of a semantic tensor category.
Well, right now I'm talking about slightly different categories attached to groups, not representation categories, but something much simpler. Vector spaces graded by the group.
Oh, I see.
And every simple object in such category is invertible. Yes. All right. And so the main problem that I want to treat is the following. Given a fusion category C, classify and a group G, classify G extensions D of C. Okay, so this is similar to the problem that was discussed yesterday at several points about braided cross G categories. The same extension, it is clear. So an equivalence, two extensions are equivalent if there is an equivalence of tensor categories between them, which preserves the grading. And which acts trivially on D.
Yeah, you want
to
be trivial on D.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
On
C, yes, on C. Trivial on C. If you don't allow things to be non-trivial on C, then the space of possibilities, the problems are closely related. It's a question whether you're going to mod out by automorphisms of D or not. Okay, so to solve this problem, I need the notion of module category. So what's a module category? So module category. So we don't have D now, we only have C, and we try to build various Ds and classify all possibilities to build D. So so it's a semi-simple, so C module category, left C module category, is a semi-simple category M with finitely many objects. And together with a action C cross M to M, satisfying some axioms. So the axioms are easy to write down. There's supposed to be, it's a categorification of notion of module, and in module we have associativity, but in category we should have an associativity constraint for the action which satisfies some kind of pentagon identity. And it's easy to write down what it is. That's right. So you get some direct sum of some constants, let me call them L, I, J, K, M, K. Right. And similarly, so this is the same thing as a monoidal functor from C to endomorphism of M, endofunctors of M. So XI goes to the functor of multiplication by XI. So the same thing as in ring theory, but categorified. And similarly, you define right modules. And there is a theorem of due to Ostrick, which says that any module, so I will not say module category, I will just say module. Any module is a direct sum of indecomposables, which are also irreducible. So indecomposable means it's not a direct sum of smaller ones. Irreducible means it doesn't have proper submodules. And so all indecomposables are irreducible, and there are finitely many of them. Indecomposables over every fusion category. And the number of indecomposable modules, classification of indecomposable modules over a fusion category is an interesting problem. The number of such modules is an interesting invariant of the category. Okay, then there is a notion of bimodule category, which you might guess what it means. This means that you have two categories, C1 and C2, and a C1 and C2 bimodule, M means that you have a left module structure over C1, a right module structure over C2, which are compatible. And the actions commute. But again, since we are in category theory, commute really is not a property, but a structure, which means that we have a commuter which satisfies something. Have a commuter. A given. Huh? Well, or associator, yes. But I could also call it a commuter because it tells us that C1 action commutes with the C2 action. But it's better called associator because commuter has a different meaning. Exactly. No, it doesn't depend. No. There is a stupid notion of tensor product for semi-simple categories. And there is a stupid way to put tensor structure on it. And this is exactly the same as the module over the tensor product. So it's equivalent to saying module over C1 box times C2 opposite. Where opposite means that we reverse the tensor product. It doesn't mean opposite arrows. It just means that we reverse the tensor product. And this is very easy to prove. Oh, everything is over complex. Exactly. Yes. You can generalize this, but I, for the purposes of this conference, we need to be over C. Of course, in this conference, we often mention unitarity. I'm not going to worry about that. This is a purely algebraic theory, and the unitarity is a separate issue, which is quite non-trivial, actually. Okay. So now, how is it related to the problem that I posed? So, relation to the problem. Well, we have these categories C sub G, D sub G, and they are bimodules over C equals to D sub 1. So in fact, they are CC bimodules, but I will just say C bimodules. Because we can multiply on both sides by D1. And this is a bimodule structure. But also more is true. These categories DG are, so D is a direct sum over G and G on DG. And they're all non-zero because our grading is faithful. And in fact, they're not just arbitrary bimodules, but they're what is called invertible bimodules. So DG are invertible bimodules. And to explain what invertible means, I have to introduce the notion of tensor product of bimodule categories. Actually, more general notion of, I can introduce more general notion of tensor product of a right module category and the left module category. So tensor product. So M is a right C module, N is a left C module, and I want to define M tensor box times over C n. And this is supposed to be just an abelian category, semi-simple abelian category. So this is categorifies, of course, notion of tensor product of modules over a ring. And basically, how do we define tensor products? We define them by some universal property. And then Yoneda lemma guarantees us that they are unique if exist. And then we have the burden of showing that they exist. And then we can give some construction, which could be a little bit unwieldy, but it's OK if we establish that they have the universal property. So we will do the same thing here. So universal property. is the following. It's going to mimic the definition of the tensor product of modules by generators and relations. So there's going to be some equalizer construction. A bifunctor F from M cross N to P, which is an abelian category, is balanced. C balanced if F of M tensor X N is given a functorial isomorphism from this to this. It's factorial in all objects and is supposed to satisfy some identity, which I again is not going to write. There is only one way to write it. It's a structure, yeah. Anytime if we are given this. So Bell M N P is the category of balanced functors. And the universal property is that functors from M box times over Cn to P is Bell M and P. And then you need the lemma guarantees that it is unique, and so we just need to show existence. So construction. Well, there are many different constructions, but one construction, you know, if you want to define tensor product of vector spaces and you don't really don't like abstract stuff, then you usually say that let's define it for finite dimensional spaces. This is kind of easier. And then you say that V tensor W is home from V star to W. So V star is more or less you can understand if you're an analyst, for example. Then operators you also understand if you're an analyst. And so then this is a good definition. And so we will do the same thing, pedestrian definition. So M tensor N is the functors over C from M opposite to N. Well, first of all, I have to say what is M opposite. So it's a way to make left modules into right modules. So we can any left module can be made into a right module by just saying that it is M, but the tensor product by so M is a right module, but we are making it a left module. So I have to define a new multiplication by X on the left by M. And this is just by definition M tensor product with X dual. And I'm going to use a left dual. So our category is kind of not just categorification of an algebra. It's a categorification of a star algebra, which has an anti-involution, which is the dualization. It opposes the product. And if you have a star algebra, then there is an easy way to pass from left modules to right modules and back by just applying the star involution. And the same for categories.
What are the left dual, right dual?
They are the same at the level of objects. And for spherical categories, there is a canonical isomorphism. But still, there is more than one canonical isomorphism. So somehow you have to be a little bit careful with them. Unless the category is symmetric, then you don't have to worry.
But you just chose left.
Yeah, it turns out to be better for some purposes. But you can also define right, and there will be this another notion of dual, and they're closely related. But this is not relevant to what I'm going to say. There is a little subtlety here, but not much. And so this satisfies the universal property. Yes?
I tried for maybe some physical explanation based on the problem. So here you consider this extended problem. You start with a C extended by group G to D.
Yes.
So I try to think whether that's correspond to a situation where you have some kind of a topological phase, the particle is described by C. Then you add a symmetry. You say if you add a symmetry, then the new situation should be
exactly. That's exactly what was explained in Lucas' talk.
Yeah,
but his problem was a little different. It was about braided cross G categories, but this is
the braiding.
I don't have a braiding, yeah. But the what I'm going to explain is very similar.
But this happens basically on the boundary of the same. Two-dimensional boundary with 3D.
Right. So basically, I'm going to explain that there is a whole bunch of problems where you're trying to marry the group to a category in many different ways. And all of these problems where you try to classify all such marriages is treated in the same way by using higher groupoids in the homotopy theory. And I will explain one example like that. Okay, so we have this construction, and it works. So first of all, I didn't say what fun C means. So this means C linear, which means exactly that they means that they commute with action of C in the same way as before, which means we are given a data. We are given a commuter, if I may say so, which implements this commutativity. And it satisfies some conditions. And morphisms are morphisms of functors, because functors of any kind form a category.
Functors, of course,
since the functors are C-linear, this is supposed to be morphisms of C-linear functors, which means morphisms that commute, that respect this commutativity structure. And again, as usual in categories, the great thing about category theory, there is only one way to set this up. Yeah, not now, though.
Yeah. That's the downside.
Yeah. Okay, and so so this is for right module and left module, but of course, if there is a left action, if there, these are bimodules, then the tensor product will be also a bimodule. So if M is a C1, C2 bimodule, and N is a C2, C3 bimodule, then the tensor product M box times over C2 of N is a C1, C3 bimodule. And because there are, of course, these actions survive because they commute with this one. When we tensor over this thing, they survive. So the same thing as in ring theory. And maybe I should give a quick example. To show this is a rather non-trivial construction. So suppose H is a semi-simple Hopf algebra. Then we have a category of vector spaces. So this is going to be C. So C is going to be a category of representations of H. And M is the category of vector spaces. So the action is just, I mean, we have a functor from C to vector spaces, which just forgets the structure of the module over H. And then we can just tensor with a module and forget that it was a module. So this gives you a module structure. So vector spaces is a very simple category. And then I can try to compute M op tensor product over C with M. And so this turns out to be representations of the dual Hopf algebra. So you see this is a rather non-trivial thing, not like in ring theory, if you tensor one-dimensional space as a module over anything with a one-dimensional space, you cannot get more than a one-dimensional space. But here you can get something more complicated. No, not essential, but I talked only about fusion categories.
So.
Yes. If H is finite dimensional. And in particular, for example, if H is a group algebra of G, then we have VEC tensor product over representations of G. VEC is the category of vector spaces graded by G. And the other way is true also. Vec tensor product over vec G, vec equals to rep G. Yeah, they are dual in this sense. Yeah, well, there is a notion of dual tensor category with respect to a module, and this is a special case of this.
I wonder what is a simple example where the C is just a category of this Z2 representation.
The Ising category is an extension. Yeah, it's an it's a special case of that.
But in this case, I know if you extend this simple category, the Z2 representation category by a group So
you, if you extend it by z mod g equals to z2 also, then you, one of the examples of such extension is the Ising category. Actually, any of the Ising categories.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. All right, so let me try to continue. So C1, C2 by module M is invertible. Well, if it has an inverse, but the inverse actually has to be M opposite in that case. So if M opposite box times M over C2 equals over C1 equals the C2, and then automatically you can get that M tensor M opposite over C2 is going to be C1. And in this case M, then M is said to define a Morita equivalence between C1 and C2. So C1 is, we write that C1 is equivalent to C2 via M. And then you can, this is indeed an equivalence relation, because if C1 is equivalent to itself via itself, and C1 is equivalent to its C2 via M, implies C2 is equivalent to C1 via M opposite. And also, if C1 is equivalent by C2 to C2 via M, and C2 is equivalent to C3 via N, then C1 is equivalent to C3 via M box times over C2 of N. And this is the meaning of this product. It's a composition of Morita equivalences. And so in particular, we see that, no. Nothing. Semi-simplicity is only essential in this conference because we are talking about unitary categories in physics. But no, it's not. We don't need. No, we only need the finite for that. And the module, but in that case, okay, you have to have a condition on what module categories you want. So if you consider non-semi-simple rings, then you need to consider projective modules. And so we need to consider exact module categories, which are analogs of projective modules. And also there is a statement that this tensor product is semi-simple. This is a non-trivial statement. It fails in characteristic P, as you can see from these examples. This is semi-simple, but this is not semi-simple in characteristic P. But in characteristic zero, it's true. And it's a non-trivial theorem, which is proved in our paper with Nikšić and Ostin. The only proof we know is uses unitary trick, which means we prove it over complex numbers using positive numbers. And then we argue that by general nonsense, this implies that it's true for any field of characteristic zero. So this means that classes of invertible bimodule categories form a group, and this group is denoted Burr peak of C, and so this is called the Brouwer Picard group of C. Well, equivalence classes. Over C, yes. And in general, it's a groupoid. So in for all categories, so we get a groupoid, which is called Burr peak. So Burr peak, it's a category where all morphisms are isomorphisms, and morphisms from C1 to C2 are all the classes of invertible bimodule categories between C1 and C2. Well,
for the Ising case, let's say you have a 1, a psi, and a sigma, you have a 3 object. So this 1 and the psi, which have a constant dimension 1.
So this has degree 1,
yeah.
And sigma has dimension degree minus 1. This is a Z mod 2 gradient.
Oh, I see. So this so the M is a sigma corresponding to rho M.
Yeah, sigma corresponds to M. M is the category of vector spaces in this case.
In this case, what about the invertible of my module, in the Ising case?
In the Ising case, what will happen is M box times over C with M is going to be C. You can check that. It's a non-trivial operation, so it might seem strange. Like here, it seems a little strange, but. Yeah, but then all of a sudden, tensoring one object with one object, you get two objects. So it's kind of strange. Oh. But it is because this operation is rather non-trivial.
So particularly means that if some module is invertible, it applies to K groups, you don't necessarily get a vertical module.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's a very non-trivial. The tensor product does not work. You cannot, in fact, you cannot even define tensor product at the level of K groups.
This
the tensor product, K group of the tensor product is not determined by the K groups of the factors. Exactly. Yeah. But it's, no, the dimension is going to multiply, but in divide by dimension of C, but it's.
Pasha, is it easy to say which C's are Morini equivalent?
Yes, to vect, only vect. But actually, it's over complex numbers. So let me explain. This brings me to the question, why this terminology? What does it have to do with Brouwer and with Picard? So what does it have to do with Picard, first of all? Well, I mean, there is a Picard groupoid of rings. So Picard groupoid of rings. And it consists of invertible bimodules. Essentially, Morita equivalences between rings. So this is a classical object in algebra, and in particular for commutative rings, for varieties, this would be line bundles, which corresponds to the usual notion of Picard group. And what has to do with Brouwer? Well, has to do with Brouwer group of a field. And so for a moment, let's work not over C, but over a field K, not algebraically closed. And then we can look at various Morita equivalences of vec K to itself. So, so let's consider invertible bimodules over vec K. Well, in characteristic, over complex numbers, we cannot cook up anything other than vec k itself. But if it is not algebraically closed, we have a category of modules over a division algebra, finite central over k. So one can show that all of them have this form. The indecomposable, the invertible bimodules, all of them have this form. And if you tensor, this corresponds to tensoring these division algebras and taking, you get matrices over a third division algebra, and then you take that division algebra. So this is a nice exercise. And so what you get is that Brouwer-Picard group of vec k is canonically isomorphic to the Brouwer group of k, which is the group of such division algebras under tensor product, and taking, if you get matrices over something, you have to take that something. Okay, but, yes?
So the Picard and Brouwer groups in classical over fields, for instance, are closely related to Galois cohomology. Are you going to tell us that there's a similar thing for fusion?
Exactly, yes. In fact, there is a whole story. And for example, if you work over an algebraically non-closed field, you can talk about forms of fusion categories. You're given a fusion category over a closed field, what kind of forms over a non-closed field it has. We have a paper with Bjelacki, and this leads to really fascinating number theory problems, which the paper discusses that. But I'm not going to talk about that here. So, but in fact, my main point is that these groupoids are not just, this is not just a group, and this is not just a groupoid. These are higher groups and higher groupoids. So in fact, Brouwer-Picard is a three groupoid, where one groupoid is an ordinary groupoid, and one group is an ordinary group. But so that means, so what is a three groupoid? This is, it's a three category, which means it has objects, one morphisms, two morphisms, and three morphisms, such that all of these things are invertible. So objects are fusion categories. Morphisms are invertible bimodules. Two morphisms are equivalences of invertible bimodule categories as bimodule categories. And three morphisms, well, equivalences are functors. And so we can still talk about isomorphisms of equivalences. And then, so this is a three groupoid. Right, and so it's denoted by Burr peak, twice underlined. And these two lines corresponding to two steps we take from ordinary groupoids, one groupoids to three groupoids.
But it has an additional operation of tensor
product. It has an additional operation in tensor product, so it's a monoidal. So actually you can even talk about, well, but the problem is that under tensor product, tensor categories are not invertible. So it's not a four groupoid. Well, it has an additional operation of box product of tensor categories. But there is no box inverse for a tensor category. So it's not a four groupoid, but it's a monoidal three groupoid. So we get this thing, and also Burr peak underline of C, which means it studies CC bimodules. So it means there's a single object C. And maybe I should give another example that's going to be relevant to us of this tensor product. So if you have C is any fusion category, then it is a So maybe I should say. So I talked about these invertible bimodules, and how do you actually construct them? How do you construct Morita equivalences? So there was a question, what is Morita equivalent to VEC? And then more generally, how to find all categories that are Morita equivalent to a given category? So C is a fusion category. And so how do you find all categories which are Morita equivalent to it? Well, for this purpose, we have to fix M, which is an indecomposable C module, left C module. And there are finitely many, according to the theorem of Ostick. And then we take C prime, which is functors of a C from M to M opposite, which is really M opposite box times of a C with M. And this is a monoidal category because functors from something to itself can be composed. And this is called the opposite dual category. But let me just say dual category. And this is Morita equivalent to C. So C is Morita equivalent through M over C prime. So M becomes an invertible C C prime bimodule. M is an invertible C C prime bimodule. And this is all of them. And it might be that you will get back C, even if M is not C. That's possible. So an example of this that is especially important is the following. So let's take C equals to E tensor E opposite for some other fusion category E. And M is going to be E. So E is an E bimodule, which is the same as module over E tensor E opposite. So the question is, what is C prime, the dual category? And it turns out that C prime is the Drinfield center of E. And you can easily see that, because what does it mean, C prime? C prime are functors on E, mapping E to itself, which commute with the left and right action of E. Well, commuting with the left action means that it multiplies by an object on the right. But then it should commute also with the right action. So that means it's objects equipped with the structure of commutativity of multiplication by this object with multiplication with any other object. And that's exactly the definition of Drinfeld and Majid of the center of the category E. And this is a modular category if E is spherical.
So you have the first C prime, do you have an op? Where did the op go?
Op means that we compose functors left-handedly, so.
But I thought that you don't need the.
No, for rings, for example, if you want to define centralizer of a ring in a module and you want it to be Morita equivalent, you need to change the multiplication to the opposite multiplication. Because, for example, centralizer of A in A is not A, but it, well, I mean, it's A if you take the opposite product for rings, for unital rings.
I'm confused about this identity. So
that this is equal to this?
I thought that should be an off further.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, but in this case, op means that I reverse the product.
Can you always find the modulus category more equivalent to the category?
Huh?
Can you always find the, so if this example is very special or generic, can you always find the fusion M? Sorry, modular?
No, you cannot. For example, if you take category of vector spaces graded by a group, cyclic group Z mod P, with non-trivial cocycle, you can show that the only category that is Morita equivalent to is itself. And it's not modular. So actually, Morita equivalence are easily understood in terms of center of the category. So two categories are Morita equivalent even only if their centers are equivalent as braided categories. So this is a fact. I'm not going to use it, but this is just a little fact.
So here, this is a statement. So this, for every indecomposable C module, you can get a Morita equivalent.
Yes, exactly. Right, and they are parameterized by such modules. So all you need is to classify such modules. But this is not so trivial. Okay, so all right. So there is this groupoid, and then you can truncate it, which means you forget three morphisms or two morphisms or one morphisms, and that will correspond to erasing the lines. And now, why is it relevant to our problem? So relevance to the problem. Well, a theorem, these D sub G are invertible bimodules over C equals to D1. And DG box times over C was D1. With dh equals to dgh. So g goes to dg is a group homomorphism. Phi from g to the Brauer-Picard group of C. OK. But why is it relevant? I did go into the pains of saying that this is a higher groupoid. And introduce all those higher categories. So why is that relevant? Well, it's because of the next theorem, which says that, which is the following. So of course, group G is an ordinary group, which means a groupoid with one point, with one object. But we can make it a higher groupoid. We can make it a two groupoid, three groupoid, four groupoid, 100 groupoid, infinity groupoid. By just saying that higher morphisms are trivial. So that means that once two things are equal, we will say that there is an isomorphism between them which is unique, and so on. And so that way is we get the following theorem. Regard G as a three groupoid with one object. Then grade G extensions of C correspond to morphisms of three groupoids from G, well, let me tilde, phi tilde, from G to Brauer-Picard. Twice underlined. of C. In other words, to give such a homomorphism at the level of isomorphism classes is necessary but not sufficient for giving an extension. Because we need to actually, well, this says that they are isomorphic, equivalent, but we will definitely need to fix an equivalence like that. And these equivalents should be compatible with associativity and also satisfy pentagon. These are two conditions. And the first condition corresponds to put the first underline, and the second condition corresponds to putting the second underline. So the first condition corresponds to the condition that this morphism of ordinary one groupoids lifts to the level of two groupoids. And the next condition corresponds to pentagon corresponds to lifting from the level of two groupoids to the level of three groupoids. Yes.
I have a stupid question. So, I think that if you consider maps between the three groupoids, they're supposed to form a three category, right?
Right.
So that means that the original thing was a three category. Can I say what the three category structure was?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, that's a good question. I never thought about that. But most likely, well, I mean, these things are also fusion categories, the extensions. And so you could consider bimodules over them, you know, functors between bimodules, isomorphism of functors. Most likely that is related to this. But that's a good question.
But after they have three groups, right? They don't need a point. They all have a lot.
That's right. They have just one object. There are three groups. Yeah. Yeah. There are three groups. Exactly.
And this theorem is hard on obvious, right? I mean, even the first one.
Not completely obvious, but it's not that hard. It's proved using Frobenius-Perron dimension.
I mean, you have one. You have a morphism like the same that dg times dh is dgh. So you have a function in one direction. But
they're invertible. So you show that they're invertible.
I mean, okay.
That's invertible. Not completely trivial, but it's not that hard. And after that, it's more or less automatic to check this. But then the point is, how do you use it? It's a kind of, you know, big categorical game. But how do you use it to actually compute things? And I'm afraid I won't have time to explain. But this is where algebraic topology comes into play. The point is that for every groupoid, so I mean, you can consider all these groupoids as infinity groupoids, which means we add morphisms at all levels, but starting from some place, if it's a three groupoid, starting from level four, we add just a morphism to account for some equalities in the single one. And so then infinity groupoids are the same thing as homotopy types. And homotopy types are something that is much easier to visualize. And this is done through the construction of so-called nerve of a category. So there is a nerve construction or classifying space construction, which is the same thing.
Not as a definition of infinity groupoid. I don't think there is any other definition.
Exactly. Yeah. Also a definition because if you this number becomes sufficiently high, and I think three is already pretty
high enough, yes.
Then it will be hard to write down algebraically all the conditions. This is because in topology, this corresponds to a three type space with three non-trivial homotopy groups. And it's not that easy to write down. I mean, you can write down the groups to write down the data that you need to sew them together into homotopy type is already not so easy. And for four type, it's going to be totally a total mess, I think. But we need only three types. Three types is kind of on the border of possible, but there is a book where this is supposedly written, but I wasn't able to understand what's written there. So how do you build such a thing? Well, ignoring the fact that I didn't give a definition, and it would be hard for me to give a definition of this, which is algebraic. Well, basically, the algorithm is very simple. So for objects, you put zero cells. For one morphisms, you put one cell, just plainly like in a picture. This is a morphism, you put a cell in. Then for two morphisms, you put two cells. And you can actually arrange to put simplices and get a Kahn complex, which has some nice properties. So you put two cells if there is a two morphism here, and so on. So this is how you construct it. And then equivalent categories defined not necessarily homeomorphic, but homotopy equivalent homotopy types. In the category of homotopy types, we don't really have notion of homeomorphism, but only notion of homotopy equivalence. And we only have homotopy classes of maps. And so for every groupoid G, we can attach to it its classifying space, BG. And if it's an ordinary group, then we attach to it the usual Milner classifying space, BG, which is the K of G1. But in general, what you get, if you have a connected groupoid with one zero cell, then, well, it has homotopy groups, pi I of BG. And these homotopy groups are easy to characterize in terms of category theory. So this is an automorphism of an I morphism, of any I morphism. And of course, when you compute pi 1, you need to have a fixed point. But the zero cell is unique, as I said, so it will be the fixed point. And this here, you can take any I morphism. It doesn't matter which one you take. It's actually I, because for example, I minus one. Yes, that's right. I minus one morphism. So, for example, pi one of BG is automorphisms of the only object. So all the classes of bimodules in our case, and so on. And so in particular, this implies that what automorphisms of three morphisms in our case will be trivial. So classifying space of B of Burpik of C is a three type. And it's going to have the following homotopy groups. So pi 1 is going to be this group, Burpik of C. And then what is pi 2? Well, this is automorphisms of any one morphism. And the one morphism is a particular bimodule category. So this is invertible C bimodule. And we can take our favorite one, because they're all the same. So this is automorphism of C over C cross C. And we already did discuss that endomorphisms were the center, Z of C. But automorphisms are invertible endomorphisms, so they're invertible objects in the center. And we could take any category M. Actually, endomorphisms for any M would be, for invertible bimodule, for any M would be the center. And then we'll get invertible objects. OK, these are classes of objects in here. And then pi 3 is automorphisms of any two morphism. And two morphism, we can take the favorite one. Let me take the identity functor from C to C. So this is the automorphisms of the identity functor of C as a bimodule functor. And it's easy to show that that's just the multiplicative group of the ground field, C star. So there are these three groups. There are two groups of this group is finite. This, you can show that. And this group is also finite abelian. And this is non-abelian in general. And this group is infinite, but we regard it as a discrete group. And there is some way of gluing these groups, which is determined by our category and which is hard to describe algebraically. Now, why do we need to do this replacement? Because, home and three group as three groups from G do Burpik twice underline of C, which is what we need to compute to classify our categories, is the same thing as homotopy classes of maps from BG to B Burpik of G.
k invariant from pi 2 to pi 3 is a quadratic form on the center?
Oh, yeah, yes.
So that's just the.
The white head bracket is this form, yes. Mm-hmm.
So those are the twists.
Uh huh. And but when you have two torsion, this becomes slightly complicated. Well, I mean, it's still the classical thing, but yeah. So there is a Whitehead bracket from pi. There is an action of pi 1 on pi 2 and pi 3. The action of pi 1 on pi 3 is trivial. The action on pi 1 on pi 2 is you can describe that because this is a group of braided autoequivalences of the center, as I said. And this acts in particular on the invertible object. And then there is a Whitehead bracket for any topological space. And that's the form. Yeah.
You need the quadratic refinement from the Hopf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there is some. When there is two torsion, there is more subtle. This is more subtle.
So what is the more
subtle? Yeah, so the commutator of the Whitehead Lie algebra is obtained from. Quadratic form.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think you have the usual twists in the Montour principle. I mean, that's what that must
be. Yes. Okay, so there are homotopy classes. And so now we need to compute these homotopy classes. And this is the good thing about it, this problem was solved 65 years ago. And there is an abstraction theory, classical abstraction theory. You can bring it to bear to this. And let me can I have 5 minutes?
Okay.
Yeah, so let me do a 5-minute review of abstraction theory, because this may, I don't know if everybody has seen it, but what you do is you want
an
to map.
An abstracted review.
Yes, yeah.
So what is this
65-year-old
paper where
we can move up? I said about 65, but maybe it's 70, actually, I don't know. But it's. Probably some works of Whitehead, I don't know, in 1940s, 50s, early 50s.
There's a nice book by Morgan and I forgot Solomon maybe about rational homotopy theory. But I think there's a new edition. Anyway, it has a very nice compact description of obstruction theory.
Right, so obstruction theory is.
Specific computation of the obstructions to the
fold. Yeah, so. Actually, it doesn't matter that this is BG. We can map from any space X to any space Y. And there is abstraction theory that describes that. And so how do you compute that? So you think of them as cell complexes or simplicial complexes. Doesn't matter too much. And let's say we have a single zero cell in each case. And we'll look at homotopy class of maps. Let's assume that the cells go zero cell goes to zero cell. And then we lift the map. Inductively to one skeleton, two skeleton, three skeleton, and so on. So first of all, so one skeleton is easy. There are just some loops coming out of this zero cell, and we just map them somewhere. So loops are generators of pi 1, and they go into pi 1 of 1. Okay. So that's easy. Then two skeleton, already there is a relation. So there are some cells. Two cells which correspond to relations between one cells, and these are relations of the fundamental group. So relations of the fundamental group must go to one under this map. So that means that we have to give a homomorphism from pi 1 of x to pi 1 of y. This is what it means to lift it to the level of two skeletons. Now we have to lift it to the level of three skeletons. And here is a. That's right. So let's choose. Let's choose a lifting. Choose a lifting is to choose essentially choose a homomorphism.
That's more than that because I can be. You're also saying what the two cells don't have anything.
That's right. It's a little bit more. So I will have to. I may have to at the third stage. I may have to re-choose if I chose them in an unfortunate way that I will be stuck for no reason at step three. So at step three, what do I get? If I have a three cell, sigma, then the boundary of this cell, so I have some map phi, and I can apply it to the boundary of this cell, which consists of two cells. And that's going to be a sphere, right? So it's a sphere in y, two sphere in y, so this belongs to pi 2 of y. And this might be non-zero. And if it's non-zero, then I'm stuck. I cannot attach a three cell. I cannot extend the map to the three cell. Well, so what do I get? I get a function on three cells in pi 2 of y. So it's a chain, a co-chain, a three-co chain. But actually, it's easy to see that it's a three-co cycle. Because of course, if I have two cells, for example, which have the same boundary, then this goes to the same thing. So the union goes to 0. So that means I get some obstruction in three-co cycles of x with coefficients in pi 2 of 1. So this, if it is not 0, then I'm stuck. But maybe I'm stuck for no reason. I claim that if I'm in B3, then actually I can correct the situation by coming back to step 2 and changing my choice so that this works out. So I can add to choice at step 2 a function chi in C2 of x pi 2 of y. So I basically, that means that I have some cap like that, and I can replace it with cup and subtract the sphere. And then what will happen is this O3 will be replaced by O3 plus d chi. And this means, so real obstruction is in H3 of x with coefficients in pi 2 of y. Now, this is the first obstruction. And if O3 is 0, then actually I have some freedom. Because this choice of chi, I could change chi by a cocycle. That would not affect d chi, so it would still work. But if I change it by a co-boundary, that's too trivial. That actually doesn't change the homotopy type of the map. So the freedom I have is cocycles by co-boundaries. So it's H2. But it's not quite H2. It's a torsor over H2, because I don't have a preferred element. I can only change by H2, but I don't have a preferred element. So get a freedom xi in torsor, or torsor means H2, but where I forgot where is my origin, over H2 of x with coefficients in pi 2 of y. At the next step, I get an obstruction. So everything goes up. So it's going to be in H4 of x with coefficients in pi 3 of y. And this obstruction will be A04. And it will depend already on phi and on this freedom psi. And then if 0, then have a freedom eta in the torsor over H4 of x pi 3 of y, and so on. And so we won't have to go higher than that. It's 3, I'm sorry, H3. And so we are not going to have to go higher than that. So I'm going to finish in 1 or 2 minutes. Because pi 4 is 0 for the target that we chose for our problem. So I'm going to write down the answer for my problem, which comes out of obstruction theory. So answer is classification of extensions. So first of all, I need to fix phi, which is a homomorphism from G to Brouwer-Picard group of C. I didn't explain how to compute it, but I'll give an example at the very end. And then get an obstruction O3 of phi in H3 of BG, which is the same as G. Cohomology of group is the same thing as cohomology of the classifying space, with coefficients in pi 2. And pi 2 is the invertible objects of C, where I regard this just as a group. And if this is 0, get to choose psi in the torsor over H2 of G, invertible objects of C. And we get O4 of phi xi in H4 of G C star. And if 0, then get to choose eta in H in torsor over H3 of G C star. So basically, at category level, I said that we have this isomorphism DG1 cross DGH to DGH. So O3 prevents us from choosing these isomorphisms consistently with associativity. If it's 0, then we can choose, but there are in many different ways, and ways are parameterized by this torsor. And once we chose these things, they don't necessarily satisfy the pentagon. That is the abstraction O4. But if it's 0, they do satisfy the pentagon. And then we can supplement, we can renormalize associativity by omega of GHK on DG, DH, DK to DGHK. So the associativity map can be renormalized by a 3-class cycle. And that's what we can do. So this is how it works. So if. That's right. So, and it's even if we knew this group and those things, we pick phi, we have this abstraction. If we're not zero, then we throw it away. If zero, we have to choose all the xi's for which this vanishes. And this is quadratic in xi. It's actually non-homogeneous quadratic function of xi in some sense. So you have to solve some quadratic equations. It could be a complicated variety, which is cut out by quadratic equations. And then for any solution of this equation, I get a freedom in here. And the example, well, I said that Brouwer-Picard of a category is the same as braided Auker equivalence of its center. So if C is vector space is graded by an abelian group A, the center is vector space is graded by A plus A check with the standard quadratic form defining the braiding. And that implies that Brouwer-Picard group of C is just the orthogonal group of A plus A star. And this is, makes this theory pretty non-trivial, because this is a very non-abelian, quite complicated group. For example, if this is a vector space over FP, this is a close to being a simple group. And there are many representations of G into this group. And for each representation, we get to make this linear algebra over a finite field or a finite ring and compute all these things. So it's a pretty complicated problem. But at least it's computable using this theory. OK, thank you very much.
Instead of starting with a fusion kind of, we'll do the same thing for the braided or modular kind.
Yes, you can do it.
Have a similar
right. So there are a bunch of other groupoids that you can define. There is a groupoid of outer equivalences of the category. That's a two group. Then there is a groupoid of braided outer equivalence, also a two group. And then there are a couple of three groups that you can consider. There is outer equivalences, which are given by trivial bimodule categories, which are invertible, which means that as a left module, it is just C. And there is a Picard groupoid of a braided category, which corresponds to invertible modules. Because for braided category, we can tensor modules, not just bimodules. Like for commutative ring, we can tensor modules. And this is also a three group. And for each of them, there is a problem of homotopy classes, which corresponds to some problem in category theory. In particular, the latter one for the for Picard groupoid of a braided category, this problem corresponds to what Lucas talked about exactly, which is constructing braided cross G categories. Yes.
If I have a three cycle in this three type, can I get a number?
Number? Well, I mean. Not sure you can get a number. Okay. So, the three cycle, I haven't thought about. So, cohomology of these classifying spaces are pretty complicated in general. And I have not computed them. So, if you fix a tensor category C, it's a nice problem. to compute cohomology of this space. Even if you have a finite group, computing its cohomology of its classifying space, a cohomology of the group, it's a rather non-trivial thing. But for this, it's even more non-trivial because we have put together three groups in some non-trivial way. So there are cohomology groups of these things, which are abelian groups, which are canonically attached to fusion category. And it's a nice problem to compute them. Maybe some of these groups are pretty simple, and then you can, for example, it could turn out that H3 is rather simple. Then maybe you can extract a number from it. But I don't know.
In this example, could you also describe the three group void structure? Three groups are at the very bottom. When you have a vector space graded by an abelian group.
Three group void structure for. What do you mean by describing this structure? Like I said, it's not that easy to explain how the groups put together algebraically. So the category is easy to describe, but this is just the definition that I gave in this case. I don't have any.
Just say what, maybe just geometrically, can you maybe describe the space? You want the homotopy type, so maybe.
No, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. I mean, I don't know. Well, homotopy type is not a space, it's a class of spaces.
Maybe
model. I don't know a good model. I mean, it's well. First of all, I have to build a space for which fundamental group is orthogonal group. Let's say over orthogonal what to n of a finite field FP. But even for B of the classifying space of this, I don't have a good model other than the main definition, because it's a pretty complicated group.
We should move on. We're running
okay.
Behind schedule. So. We should go get our photographs taken in the atrium.
Okay.
And then lunch. So let's thank Pavel again.